John, thanks very much. This is Saturday with Clara Byrne, and your views are very welcome on any of the topics we're about to cover over the next hour. You can text us 51551, email saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us in our studio today, we've Barry Cowan, Fianna Fáil TD, Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD, Owen O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD, and all of whom are on the Oireachtas Committee considering what to do about water charges. More on that in a little while. John Drennan, who's political columnist with the Irish Sun, and Fionnán Sheehan, editor of the Irish Independent. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning.
I just want to start, before we move on to water, Kate, with yourself and that news that emerged yesterday that the remains of several hundred infants and young children were found at the Tuam Mother and Baby Home. Now, what we've heard since then are calls for the Commission of Inquiry, the terms of reference to be expanded to include other homes around the country. What's your view on that? Can it happen and should it happen?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anyone that wasn't shocked by what was revealed yesterday. And I just think the sheer scale of the find. And also, I suppose, when you consider that it's recent history, when we consider, I suppose, concentration camps and that of the early part of the century, you know, this is so much more recent, and there's such similarities. I mean, if you visited any of the concentration camps, it just reminded me last night, looking at the news, I remember seeing the ovens that children were burnt in, the small graves, and we hear of like a subterranean set up with 20 compartments with remains of human babies being left in them. It's just shocking that that's in our recent history. I suppose this is, suppose, a preliminary finding in the work of the Commission. I think it's very important that it clearly is doing its work. We are seeing results from the work of the Commission. So I think it's very important to let the Commission continue their work, their very good work. We'll see.
It's more than preliminary things finding, emerge, though, isn't it? I mean, this is a very concrete statement yesterday that we have found the remains of several hundred children. Now, if that is the case in one home, shouldn't we look at all the other ones?
Absolutely. There's no reason why we should be, I suppose, limiting the scope of this investigation. But I think where we stand at the minute is that we let the work that's been done at the minute be finished and finished properly, and then move on to the next phase. And I think it's very important, I suppose, for people. Obviously, this has clearly affected so many families around Ireland. I think we should be very cognizant of the fact here today that there's people listening in who survived that setup, and women and families who were engaged in that. That, I suppose, if there ever was to be a silver lining found in what was found yesterday, that people that have been speaking about this for years, that now people can say, well, you weren't making it up. He did suffer, and these were awful things that happened to your families. I'm not surprised, actually, at it. I'm shocked, but I'm not surprised, because if you consider the amount of, I suppose, women that travel out of Ireland every year for abortions, it's not like people just started having unwanted pregnancies in Ireland last year or the year before. It's human nature that people get pregnant, and this may be that this is the result of it. And the effect that the Catholic Church had on our society, and the fear that they imposed on families in our society. I think this is a shocking shadow on our history.
Owen O'Brien, how do you feel about that solution or proposition that Kate has made, that we allow the work of the Tuam inquiry to continue, end, and then move on and perhaps look at other sites?
Well, the first thing I'd say is given the very shocking news, I think all politicians have to approach this with great sensitivity, particularly given the fact that you have surviving family members who are just getting to grips with this news. I suppose from our point of view, what we'd like to see is Yvonne Murphy come before the Oireachtas Committee as soon as possible to start talking through the implications of these developments. I don't think it would be sufficient to simply allow the existing commission to do its work and then maybe after that move on to other sites. So I think there is probably a strong argument to start expanding its terms of reference now. But there's also the broader issue of now that it's been confirmed that those bodies are there, and in fact there may well be more bodies in close to the Tuam site, let alone other sites around the country. There's also the issue then of trying to establish how those children died, and there's a huge job of work for the county coroner in terms of establishing the facts of that. And then I think if you listened to the people in RT last night, the sons and daughters of family members who may have lost their lives, they were talking about, I suppose, the need for recognition, the need for memorialising in some appropriate fashion the graves of their loved ones and their family members. And that means there's going to have to be more consultation with those families. So this clearly isn't an issue to be turned into a party political football, but I do think a detailed discussion at the Oireachtas Youth and Children Committee, and I do think there is a case for expanding the terms of reference, but we have to keep the families and particularly the surviving family members at the centre of this and be guided by what it is that those people feel is an appropriate resolution to what's clearly a very dark chapter in Irish history.
Well, we have the Irish First Mothers Group, and we also have women who were in mother and baby homes, not the June one, but as recently as the 90s, calling for that inquiry to be expanded. John, you wanted to come in?
It seems to be part of a spectral pattern of misgovernance, which just continues on to the present day. Like, I mean, we have had our high-profile controversies, you know, this week over water and all the rest of it. But, I mean, this was also over the last couple of weeks we've had the Grace, you know, inquiry and that gathering scandal that is coming into play. One thing I think which would be very important in terms of any commission of inquiry or whatever, and normally I'm very, you know, sceptical about these things, but I think it's necessary, is that it would also have to examine what level of supervision, if any, and there probably wasn't, the state had in terms of how these homes ran, because no more than now, the state had a very bad habit of outsourcing its problems to convenient groups who were, of course, in the church, were all too willing on occasions to take and profit from that.
But well, it certainly seems like the problem was handed over.
To lock, stock and barrel.
Barry, an appearance suggests Owen before the Youth and Children Committee of Yvonne Murphy. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, quite possibly. I think that maybe that should be worth exploring, definitely, to see what help and assistance that can give in order to put a pathway in place to allow these issues the potential to be resolved in the correct and proper fashion. I think initially, you know, like everybody else, we're just glad that the, you know, people's fears and beliefs, not that we're glad, but it confirms that people's fears and beliefs and contention have been vindicated by this initial preliminary finding. And as has been said by others, you know, there's a pathway for that to follow too in relation to recognition and cause, memorials, as has been said, and accountability too will ensue. But that's the work of the existing commission, and the terms of reference we hope are sufficient to allow that to continue. But you're of course, we have to now seriously consider a response to the implications of this in relation to other homes around the country.
Would you like to see an expansion?
Well, I think it should be explored, and there should be a forum provided, whether it be an Oireachtas committee or otherwise, in order to investigate the potential that's there for that to happen. And those people should be afforded some comfort in that realm initially, with a view to a more extensive response.
So one, the Sean Ross Abbey in Roscrea in Tipperary wouldn't be too far away from your own constituency. I mean, do you ever have representations on this? Do people talk about it? Or, as is the case in Tuam, some people wanted Catherine Corliss to leave well enough alone, didn't they? And not to continue with her investigations when she was
and
researching.
You know, she too obviously has to be hugely commended for her part in bringing us to this juncture. And there are many other Catherines around the country, I'm sure. And yes, I have heard various anecdotal evidence in relation to my own constituency and beyond in my region. And I would be more than interested as a legislator, as a public representative, in ensuring that a correct process and pathway is put in place in order for these issues to be dealt with in the manner in which one would expect a modern society to deal with the unfortunate sins of the past.
Okay, well, look, I'm sure it's something that we will return to and it will be discussed in the coming days. But let's move on now, because we have three politicians here, all of whom are members of that committee, which was in the headlines this week, deciding what to do about domestic water charges. Kate, was Barry Cowan up to something this week in that committee?
Absolutely. She knew by the walk of him coming in he was up to something. He came in with his stance on a pre-prepared statement on Tuesday morning, and we had originally a draft report, and maybe now one wasn't blindsided, but I mean, my understanding was we were going in to discuss a draft report, and we were going to discuss it. And Barry and the Fianna Fáil party decided, in my view, to come in with to lay out their position on things fairly concisely within 7 points. I know an additional 8 point was added by Willie O'Dea afterwards. And
what was wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it, but I mean, we have a committee structure, and we have a process, and we had a draft report which we'd all worked on for 9 weeks, and we've all engaged. I don't think there's anyone here that would say that we haven't engaged as a committee and listened to experts from from provided by some parties and also international experts, the commission, so much information. And it was to me, and I said this in private session, so I'm not just saying it here, that I mean, it seemed to sort of like ignore all the work that had happened in the previous 9 weeks, and Fianna Fáil had to lay out their stall. Now, I suppose, now looking at it at the end of the week, and what it did encourage then was the chair asked for everybody to set out their stall. So hopefully on Tuesday, the committee will look at the original draft document with everyone's positions embedded in it, and then we will work as a committee through those positions and come to an agreement, and that is the process.
Barry came in with his points, and you thought that was out of line, really, with where the committee were going. So you asked Simon Coveney to intervene.
No, I most certainly did not ask Simon Coveney to intervene.
So why did he intervene?
Well, just let me explain what happened.
Because he's not on the committee.
Just let me explain what happened. Barry came in with his stance. I was there and I made points as to exactly what he said. And to be honest, I felt that we as a committee, the Fine Gael members of the committee, met, and we then asked to meet with the minister, and we said, please come out strong on this. Fianna Fáil have just said, A, they want to scrap water charges. B, they want to give back all the money. And they don't want metering to continue. Literally very, very definitive bullet points backed up by no evidence. And to my mind, circumventing all of the work and evidence put in front of the committee to, I suppose, fulfil their own political stance during the last general election. I mean, at least certain groups have always had a particular stance, so one can't argue that. Anyway, here we are. Hopefully on Tuesday morning we will have a robust document to work through. And this is about finding solutions. And we were given a task as a committee to find solutions to this.
Okay.
And Fine Gael party will work with the other parties to find solutions to this problem. That is our job.
Barry, why were you stirring it?
I wasn't stirring it. I was merely, it was coming towards the end game of a process that began with the two parties agreeing a process in order to facilitate government to deal with many other issues and allow a government be formed. But we knew the success or failure of that government would be dependent on finding a solution in this area.
But you have the draft report. Like, let's just address the points that
with the expert
Kate
commission fed into this process. We had gone through the 9 weeks. We'd listened to the experts. We'd engaged with witnesses. We'd questioned witnesses. We were arriving at a conclusion, and it was up to the committee to begin a process in order to hopefully agree by consensus or otherwise make a recommendation by majority to the Dáil for it to decide what path it takes thereafter. And, I and my party met, considered all the evidence that was before us, and laid out our stall to the members of the committee. To the members of the committee.
Did he ride roughshod over a draft report, Owen, in your view?
No, first of all, there wasn't a draft report. And it's important that people understand what the process was.
There was a draft report.
There wasn't a draft report. There was a draft of...
By the chair to help and assist the committee and arrive at a conclusion.
It also wasn't a report. It's important that people understand what the process was. In addition to the public hearings, we had private sessions. And those private sessions were to go through the 18 recommendations of the expert commission by theme. The previous private sessions in the previous weeks, we had gone through the relatively non-contentious ones. So clearly there was a couple of issues we knew that was going to be contentious, the issue of metering, the issue of a charge for so-called excess use, etc. On the agenda for that day was to be a discussion of that issue of the excess charge and the financing of water services. So in fact, when I came into the committee, what I was expecting us to discuss is exactly what we discussed, which is those contentious issues that we hadn't discussed privately. What the chair had done is he had done a summary document of the non-contentious issues. So what was meant to happen on Tuesday is to discuss the contentious ones. Whatever the outcome of that, as far as I understood it, add it to the summary draft, and then we would go through that. So actually, I have to say, and I'm not saying this because I agree with some of the positions that Fianna Fáil have taken in this matter, my understanding is the committee was to do exactly what we've done. What the problem is that at that point, an emerging majority seemed to be taking place against any kind of reintroduction of water charges and against any continuation of metering.
Where are we at with that vote at the moment? Because I have it 9 in favour and 10 against.
Let me make this point.
But it's easy enough to tell it all.
What happened at the point where there seemed to be an emerging majority is Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael took offence at that. They kind of panicked. They were running in out of the committee like headless chickens. Then you had this unprecedented intervention by the minister. Like for Simon Coveney to come out and make that press intervention on Tuesday evening before the committee had even reached any conclusions is a direct interference, not only direct interference in the work of the committee, it's also an interference in the confidence and supply agreement. And then to threaten to say, well, you know, if you don't do what I want you to do in this committee, I'm not going to legislate for it, even though I put in writing some months earlier that I would. That, I have to say, is quite remarkable. Now, we haven't finished it yet. There are 10 members currently who are against any form of charges. There are 7 definitively in favour of an excess charge. And then there's 3 floaters, 2 of whom have expressed a position, but some of us think they might be open to change. And I'm
they
hoping
are
on
Noel Grealish?
Noel Grealish, Grace O'Sullivan, and obviously the chair.
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping is we're to have a draft report, a full draft report dealing with all of the issues on Monday. We have 5 hours of meetings between Tuesday and Wednesday. We can spend more time on Thursday if we want, but that we can get this report done. And that means, for example, if there's an issue where the committee is divided, we have to take votes so that we can have our work complete. I think it would be a shame if we have 10-10 splits on key issues, because that means the committee can't agree anything because there's no casting vote of the chair. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think we can finish on time so long as people knuckle down, do the work and start taking some decisions.
Well, just to add, like, I mean, it's quite obvious from what both of us have said that the interference and interjection by the minister was premature and may well have been politically motivated. And, you know, the committee hadn't
explain
made,
that now. Do you
well,
mean
the, well, the committee hadn't
it's a leadership issue.
Yeah, that may be at the back of it. I don't know. I'm at a loss to understand why he would ask the Attorney General to adjudicate on something that hadn't reached a conclusion for the committee, not having agreed by consensus or majority decision on some of the issues.
It's just Barry, when a party that can pull the plug on the government comes out with a very definitive position on water charges, and you haven't up to now...
There's a position
now
within the committee, Claire, that hadn't arrived at a conclusion.
But you come and in, I mean, with your legal advice, you know, and your 6 points.
It was up to me and my committee members, I feel, to establish amongst the committee where people stood on certain issues to allow us see if we could reach consensus, and if not agree by consensus, agree by majority, because there was provision within our arrangement with Fine Gael that both parties could have differing views on this issue.
Okay, Fiona and Sheena, I want to bring you in because speculation during the week that all of this comes back to bad blood between Simon Coveney and Barry Cowan.
Well, I think should be allowed to comment on that if you don't mind.
You will.
Yeah,
you will, absolutely. But
you mean,
but I want
you're
to ask.
You're talking about, there's nothing personal. This is about a policy issue. This is about us implementing our manifesto. This is about us committing to a process that we engaged in good faith and arriving at a conclusion that we feel justifies the democratic process.
So there's no bad blood between the two of you?
No.
I think ultimately, you know, the process is all very nice and the personality is all very nice. This really just comes down to 3 questions, and I'm most concerned with the third one here. Will there be water charges? Well, more than likely not. That's the direction in which we're going. What's going to happen with the bills that were and were not paid? Are people going to get refunds and so on and so forth? My main concern here is, if there isn't going to be water charges, where's the money going to come from? Because all I keep hearing is that, well, don't worry about it. I mean, really, the water system, we're all agreed that it needs to be upgraded and it's very important for the environment and so on and so forth. It'll come from central taxation. Now, what is central taxation? Central taxation is basically the ordinary working man and woman continuing to pay high levels of income tax that they are paying at the moment, and the scope to give them any relief in terms of money into their back pockets being eroded away by the manner in which things like this get lumped onto to that bill. You continue to draw from that pot. In the case, actually, of people, so either way, people are going to be paying here one way or another. Either you're going to pay based upon your amount of usage, or you're going to pay directly to your income tax. And as we know, the number of middle income earners and the contribution that they are making to that income tax pot continues to grow, and the yield that has been drawn from them continues to be exacerbated. And then secondly, rural Ireland men and women are basically going to be paying twice, because they're going to continue to pay on their group water schemes. And on the second front, they're going to continue to pay out of their income tax. So I haven't heard anything resembling a satisfactory answer to, if there is no water charges, where is the money going to come from?
That's because we haven't published the report yet, but the report particularly
but
the report.
But
no,
on.
Yeah, but
you know
absolutely.
You're
but
going on where's the money coming from?
On all of those issues, both our own party, the Fianna Fáil party, have outlined very clear and, in my view, credible answers on all of those things. Now, the report hasn't been published yet because we're in the final week of it. But, for example, on the group water schemes, of course, if there is no standing charge for people in the public water system, there should be no standing charge for people in group water schemes. And, in fact, we put this question to the department. It would probably cost about an extra €4.5 million to ensure that there's absolute equality between people in public water schemes and group water schemes if there's no domestic charges.
Well, that couldn't actually be fully established because we didn't get exactly how much.
But that's on the basis of the figures the department.
Subvention to a household in a rural scheme, because rural people say, and we hear them, and you know, I was referred to them, people say, I've always paid for water. I have a rural scheme and I'm paying €200 per annum. But there was capital subvention from central government to put that in place. There's supplementary investment by the state in relation to ongoing maintenance, which hasn't been qualified or quantified as an amount. And if it were such that the department or the group schemes themselves, national organisation, could tell us that, for example, it could well be that without that subvention, they'd be paying €300 a year or €400 a year. So there's a benefit in kind there that has to be established for us to adjudicate on the parity
I think
and the equality.
To sort of almost move away from the minutiae of the committee, which is starting to sound like the Good Friday Agreement to a certain extent, that we mentioned the issue of who was being blindsided earlier. And I think the people who are being blindsided are the taxpayers of Ireland. And they're being blindsided by yet another example of chaotic governance, which has gone on almost now for a decade. I mean, let us remember that water charges originally was not a hugely complex issue. It was something which is common in other European countries where people pay for water and pay for services and have some form of accountability. The fee was not too high. It was about €250 a year. It's important to remember that it actually did secure the assent of 63% of the people. I think at some point that were actually paying that. And now we have created this absolute constitutional monstrosity where we are having the most abstruse discussions which completely avoid real serious factual issues. I mean, for example, Pascal Donoghue, you will know if you become a minister, Kate Shortley, is running around like a headless chicken already wondering where he is going to find the money for the next budget. And now we are going to get this placebo of general taxation that suddenly 300 or 400 or 500 or 600 or 700 million quid is under the sofa knocking around the place to be just plucked out of the sky. The other problem is that all the political messing has created a situation and a scenario where if there is one thing that people will not pay for in Ireland now anymore, it's water charges, because those who didn't pay certainly won't pay after their first victory. But more significantly still, those who did pay and
the
who were compliant,
majority.
The silent, well, there can be vocal sometimes, the silent majority. Even if this is given to the revenue, because that's one of the suggestions that's made, if you put something under the revenue harp and send it to a house, Paddy goes down on his knees, immediately gets out the rosary beads and says, give it to them as quick as you can. I think even if you put it under the control of the revenue would be told to something off.
I think it's very important, I mean, to answer a couple of the questions, in that it was stated by Fianna Fáil at the committee on Monday that direct taxation, as in the PAYE worker, should be paying for water in Ireland. Also, there is no mechanism explained by either Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin, just because those two members here are on the panel with me, as to how you would, I suppose, quantify excessive use without a meter at the door. And really, to my mind, what Fianna Fáil have done is they have a charter sort of for the wastage of water, in that they're going to say that I should have to pay for the lad down the road who leaves the tap on or has a swimming pool or whatever. I don't think too many people at swimming pools or washes the car or waters the lawn or whatever. So, I mean, I know Barry's going to come in and say district meters are the same as meters at the door. But what we must note is that there have been 28,000 leaks identified through at door meters, and also that a saving of 70 million litres per day is the estimate on that. So district metering, yes, is a brilliant process for metrics, but there is nothing to beat the gold standard that is the meter at the door. And I know that Barry's probably going to quote Scotland, and just to preempt that, they talk about Scotland as being this excellent system. People in Scotland pay on average £400 a year for water, and they have an opt-in system for meters. But what they have done, the people who set out set, walked into the committee on day one not wanting to pay water charges. They have ignored every bit of evidence that has come in front of them to say that meters are the best way of measuring water consumption, also the best way of identifying leaks, loss patterns and distribution patterns. And what this is all about is it's not just about charging people. This has come down to just sending a bill out. This is there's an environmental issue here. Water is a precious commodity. We have to comply with the European framework, the directive. We can't be in breach of that. And just to address the issue of the minister coming out, the minister came out, to my mind, the most useful thing he did when coming out was to explain that the advice of the Attorney General stated that by not charging, you were in breach.
Well, he was accused of politicking.
He was just saying the truth. There's no point in having the committee recommend that you legislate for something that's going to end up with, if we look at the Greek example and the Italian example, a retrospective bill of 20,000 per day for non-compliance plus an up.
So it wasn't a leadership pitch. So
well, I mean, I don't know if it was or not. I didn't ask him. I'm only interested in water and sorting this out and working through the committee to get solutions here. And I mean, I know there's a rumour going around in Fianna Fáil that Fine Gael didn't engage with the committee. We have been there every day. And if I wasn't there, I was next door to another committee. I think it's yourself, Barry, that's been in and out and popping into us every so often.
You can check the record to confirm your fears in that regard, to be honest.
No fears, Barry.
If we can just be calm about this, it would appear, for example, that Fine Gael agree charges are gone. Fine Gael agree.
No, we don't.
They don't. Okay, well, it's fine. You know, we don't have to agree. Do you agree that it comes from general taxation? Do you agree people who paid should be repaid? Do you agree there should be a further effort to establish parity and equality between rural schemes and public schemes? But where we disagree is in relation to how, we agree, first of all, that those whom willfully abuse, of which there are very little, the experts would tell us, need to be penalised.
10% of people are using 43% of the water, Barry. But that is abuse. 10% of people are using 43% of the water. How are we going to quantify that?
Sorry. Can we be calm about this? You know, if we're calm about it, we have some hope.
But I'm not sure, Barry, that Kate agrees with you on those assumptions that you made.
I don't agree with you.
But I don't have to. We don't have to.
I don't agree with you.
You just told her that she agrees with all those things that she doesn't agree with.
But the issue they wish to bring this down on, and its potential for agreement and for the Dáil to have its say and to have its will, is in relation to the legality and its compliance with an EU directive.
No, that's the issue.
That's
the truth.
And I'll tell you why we disagree. Because we think the 2007 Act can be used successfully to penalise those who willfully abuse, rather than continuing individual metering.
Even though it hasn't been used up to now.
At a cost of 300 million. And also a system to catch what's very little, a 30 million, a complex billing system, 30 million a year, to deal with an issue that can be resolved through investing in solving the leaks. And district metering, we are told, and I can only go by the experts that came before the committee, Kate, no more than yourself, and they did emphatically say that district metering can do that job
no,
for us.
No, they did
and
not.
If they,
right.
if they can do that
job,
we're
not going to solve this one here. Oh, no,
so
Bryn, do you want to finish up on this?
Actually, Fionnuala is right. The questions he's asked are actually the really important questions, and they're the questions the public are going to want to know. So, for example, the cost from general taxation, for example, if you're to follow the proposal that Sinn Féin and others have made, is 200 million a year. That's money that we're spending this year, and therefore you just roll that over into next year. So there's no extra taxation required. What the water utility will then do is what they're currently doing. They will borrow the difference to have their capital investment programme. That was always the plan. So the total amount of general taxation revenue, it's 213 or 217 million. In terms of group water schemes, there has to be equity and fairness. And we think we've come up with good propositions for that and for refunds. But here's the really important point. There is no evidence from the figures for Irish Water that there is a problem of domestic water wastage. And in fact, if you wanted to go after that water wastage, you would have to spend 300 million euros on rolling out meters. You would have to spend tens of millions of euros annually to monitor and to bill. To do what? To get a tiny amount of revenue and to have a very small amount of water conservation. What you need to focus on is 40% of all treated water, 47%, is lost in the public system. So if you want to ask me what's the best way to spend 300 million euros, it's treat that, deal with the pipes, but also deal with the current infringement proceedings we have coming from the European Union, nothing to do with water charges, but the sewage treatment plants, the 40 of them across the country that are pouring raw sewage into our rivers and lakes.
So it's not domestic users who are the problem. That's your main contention.
That's Irish Water's evidence to the committee. Okay. So invest that money in tackling the leaks, and tackling the sewage treatment plants.
There's a lot of, owners like a very fine wine, it's very smooth, but there might be a hangover tomorrow. There's a lot of very fuzzy mats knocking around all of this. And the other thing I think we should also have to bear in mind that how can the committee, if this committee is split 10-10 down the middle, and that's where it appears to be at the moment, how can it put together any form of credible report that can move
this on? It
collapses.
If there's a 10-10 split, it collapses.
What
and
happens?
This is back,
what
this
happens
is, then it's back on the government to decide how to proceed.
I mean, I don't see why people would be anti having a state-of-the-art water infrastructure in this country, which is what we are trying to achieve here. What we're trying to do is have a sustainable fund for investment in a completely neglected infrastructure. We're trying to deal with the problem of lead piping. We have dealt with a lot of the contamination from cryptosporidium and that in the waters. So, I mean, this is about trying to find solutions. It shouldn't be about trying to circumvent the law and get multiple. We could be here till next February or next March listening to legal opinions on this.
Does your party agree that this is about
investing in our infrastructure and getting a state of the art.
From the party that's had the lowest levels of investment in public water servicing in decades. Like for 6 years you underinvested, Barry, and that's why we have 40 wastewater treatment plants in breach of EU law.
All right, Barry, just put that question again.
Do you accept, Kate, as Minister Coveney did seemingly some time ago, that the existing charging regime and water charges per se is gone, not coming back, and will be paid for out of general taxation?
Well, what we're focused on is we're focused on a charge for excessive use for people that waste water. I was of the impression, and I thought when we started the committee, that where we were looking at was defining what normal usage was, giving a generous free allowance.
Do you accept giving a generous
free allowance to households so that very few people who just have regular lives with no particular needs or swimming pools or whatever would get no bill? Lately you've started talking about the 2007 Act. I mean, Paul Murphy, Deputy Paul Murphy, has been talking about the committee many weeks.
Water charges are gone for the general
population. For people who use a normal usage. And what I thought,
how many households waste water?
Well, the average 123. But the evidence on the metrics that we have from the amount of metering we have already is suggesting that about 10% of households use about 43% of the water. So I mean,
what are they doing?
I don't know what they're doing.
But we have to recognise the ability of the 2007 Act to capture that audience, which I believe, and the experts tell us there is willful abuse.
Circumventing
because
the
I don't want to spend 300 million more on what
you just want to be right.
Wasting 300 million
right.
More.
Okay.
I don't want to spend 30 million a year on a billing system that we don't need.
It would be a great message to send out to the 63% of law-abiding citizens who abided by the law and paid their bills that you're going to get a refund, because the government and the Dáil of the day doesn't have the neck to go after those who didn't. That'll send out some message. So basically, when I go into a store next week and I buy a toaster, and I say, no, I'm not paying the fiver of VAT there because that fellow over there is after shoplifting something over there and you won't go after him, so therefore I shouldn't have to pay it either. I mean, it's an astonishing message to send out to people.
And good luck
to the next person who tries to come along with any sort of indirect taxation.
How does the conservation grant fit into the toaster analogy?
Well, I hope they prepare a lot better, Fiona, than the regime that's been put in place was prepared for by the last government.
Toasters are very cheap now.
I'm 3 years.
You might actually try for something
better,
television
to
or something.
This issue.
We'll take a break
have to accept that there's a democratic process to
this. After this. We do need to move on pretty quickly, but I want to bring you some of the reaction, because we've had a lot of it to our conversation about water charges. I live and work in the UK. I'm listening. It was incredible to read on Tuesday that Barry Cowan felt the government could be brought down on the issue of water charges. This at a time when Ireland is sandwiched between Brexit and the new American administration. Playing games and small-minded views are clearly more important to Barry. Barry, I'll let you come back after I read you the next one. Oh God, not more pointless waffle about water charges. Are people so naive that they think that water is free? Another listener, Barry Cowan's contention that Irish people do not waste water is disingenuous and wholly untrue. Barry, quick word.
I can only speak for the facts that were presented to the committee, and it is a fact that people don't wantingly, willfully waste water. If they do, they should be penalised. There's provision within the recommendation we've made within the 2007 Act, which can be further expanded if people wish or if the committee want to explore that opportunity. We're more than willing to do so.
Okay. Let's go to Amanda Ferguson now, freelance journalist who is in the RTE studio in Belfast. Amanda, we had heard a little earlier on that the DUP were holding a press conference at 4 o'clock today. Now, I understand that that press conference is not happening, but there are persistent rumours around Arlene Foster this afternoon and her future.
Yes, I think because it was such a devastating result for the DUP last night, that rumours were certainly swirling as to whether Arlene Foster would resign, given that the Ulster Unionist Party leader Mike Nesbitt's fallen on his sword. But the only press conference I'm aware of today at 4 o'clock is Michelle O'Neill, Gerry Adams and Mary Lou MacDonald to discuss the election results for Sinn Féin. So DUP sources have reassured journalists that there will be no press conference for the DUP this afternoon.
Okay, now as you said, the UUP have a huge problem now. They've lost their leader Mike Nesbitt. Where do they go from here?
Well, interestingly, the Ulster Unionists are due to meet this week for one of their sort of annual meetings. So perhaps the future leadership will be discussed there, but it's hard to see who would be in the frame this time. One of the big scalps of the election was Danny Kennedy, a former Ulster Unionist Party minister, and maybe people would have thought that perhaps he might have been in line if ever Mike was to move on. But it's not clear what the future holds for them, because to come back with 10 seats after entering the election with 16 seats was a horrific result for the Austrian Unionists.
And given the result, the reduction in the seat numbers for the SDLP and the Alliance Party to do 12 and 8 respectively was a great result for both those parties.
Yes, certainly. The losers coming out of this, even though the DUP has 28 seats, that's a drop from 38. That's a significant reduction, and it also means they wouldn't be able to wield a petition of concern on their own. The Austrian Unionists are losers coming out of this. I noted earlier in the day, Eamon McCann, who failed to be re-elected in Foyle, said that Arlene Foster won the election but for the wrong party. So this is certainly Sinn Féin's day, but Colm Eastwood, the SDLP leader, can be extremely happy with 12 seats, because that represents a net gain in the reduced assembly. And also Naomi Long holding 8 seats and having their party's best performance for decades, again they can be happy too.
Okay, how much credence has been given to the theory that people voted for anti-Brexit parties in this election?
Well, certainly it was damaging for Gerry Carroll in West Belfast. West Belfast is now 4 Sinn Féin, 1 People Before Profit. The big scalp there was the SDLP former minister Alex Atwood. But certainly the suggestion from Gerry Carroll was that Sinn Féin poured significant resources into highlighting that it was in favour of leaving the EU. He suggested that they were unfairly lumped in with the DUP and UKIP. So that has been an issue. But if you look at the makeup of the seats now, out of the 90 seats, 60 would be people who took a Remain position, and 30 are people who took a Leave position in the referendum.
Okay, Amanda, thank you very much indeed. We'll let you go now and hopefully get a well-earned rest. I know you were at a count centre until nearly 4 o'clock this morning. Owen, so Arlene Foster, you say you won't deal with her.
No, we haven't said we won't deal with her. We've said that she can't return as First Minister while the RHI investigation is pending. But clearly, if she's the leader of the DUP and there's going to be negotiations very quickly, then we'll engage with the DUP's negotiating team, including her, if she's still leader. In some senses, though, Arlene's future isn't really the issue. There have been really profound changes in this election, and I think it's going to take us quite some time to get our heads around them.
Sorry, I just want to get it clear. You will negotiate with her, but you will not allow her to become First Minister while the inquiry is ongoing.
Absolutely. Our position from the outset, from going back to the end of last year, was Arlene Foster needed to step aside without prejudice while the RHI investigation was ongoing. Obviously, if she was found guilty of nothing, she could return into the position of First Minister. But if that wasn't the case, then she couldn't come back. We have never said that we wouldn't engage with Arlene Foster as leader of the DUP in the context of negotiations. But look, just first of all on the election, obviously a huge result for Sinn Féin. We took an extra 50,000-60,000 votes. It's our highest vote ever. We've reduced the gap between Sinn Féin and the DUP to a single seat from 10, and we elected 41% women candidates. We've elected a lot of new, young, very energetic candidates. So it was a good election for Sinn Féin. It was also, I have to say, a positive election for the SDLP and Alliance, as you've outlined. Particularly bad for unionism. They've lost their majority and their overall majority in the Assembly for the first time, which is very significant. The DUP, and I think this is a good thing for everybody, have lost their right to hold the petition of concern. Your package there is right. I think it was a poor election for People Before Profit. They lost 2,000 votes in West Belfast and they lost Damon McCann. What now has to happen is this. All of the political parties yesterday, as they were speaking post-election, were saying we need to get the institutions back up and running. We need to start delivering properly for the people that elected us. So there's going to be a period of negotiations. We're going to go into those very constructive.
So you have a 3-week window for that to happen.
We would like to see them happen as quickly as possible. And we want to see and we believe that the institutions can be put back up in place very, very quickly. We're not looking to put new issues on the table. All Sinn Féin has been asking for is the agreements that were reached with Fresh Start, with St Andrews, etc., to be honoured and implemented in full. So this isn't about a new round of new negotiations with fresh issues. It's about honouring what was there. But the only way we can do that is if all of the parties, and this includes Sinn Féin, but crucially the DUP, get around that table on the basis of mutual respect and equality and say, in order to deliver for the people who elected us.
After the bitterness of that campaign, though, and the reason why the election happened in the first place.
I don't think so. And I was listening very carefully to the DUP figures as they were speaking last night. They were saying they wanted the institutions back up and running. They were saying that there's an onus on everybody to deliver. What you say during an election campaign is very quickly forgotten when you get into those negotiations. But what's really important is the dynamics that were undermining the stability of the institutions before Martin McGuinness took the decision to withdraw and precipitate the election have to change. The DUP has to realise there are no majorities.
Sounds like it would be easier for those negotiations to happen if Arlene Foster were gone.
I think it would be easier if the DUP changed the approach that it took. And I'm certainly not going to personalise this around one individual. There is more than one individual responsible for the very negative and undermining attitude of the DUP. And that's before we even get into whether or not there is any truth in the concerns that many of us have about possible corruption with RHI. Okay. So there are big issues here, but we certainly think that they can be resolved and resolved quickly if everybody approaches this in the right frame of mind.
Okay, Fionnán Sheehan, what does the result, do you believe, say to what might happen if we had an election in the Republic and how Sinn Féin might do, or does it say anything?
No, I think you have to measure them separate. What it does say is that Sinn Féin run a good, effective campaign. You saw in on this occasion, in terms of the growth in the turnout, that it was a harnessing of the nationalist vote. So therefore, you have to ascribe the additional turnout to those who were voting for nationalists. And they were motivated to do so on this occasion, even though it was the second vote that they were having within the space of 12 months. I suppose the problem for Sinn Féin on this occasion is that, yeah, the arithmetic has changed and the context is very much changed, but the setup is still the same. They can't form a functioning government now without working with the DUP. And I'm unconvinced, judging by the way that the DUP have gone over the past couple of years, that even a change of personnel at the very top is going to change the narrative coming from them. There's a difficulty now in that what this election has shown up is a massive crisis for unionism in terms of where do they go now. So you do have that substantial majority, even larger, I suppose, reflected in this election result in terms of those who were Remainers and those who were Brexiters. So that whole crisis about what exactly is the union over the coming years is certainly springing to mind. And likewise, those figures that came about today, they're not really a fluke of the single transferable vote system or anything like that. They are broadly reflective of the first preference vote that each of the parties got. So there is a massive problem now. And if anything, you could say the only plus side for the DUP is that they've consolidated their position once again as the dominant voice within unionism. The UUP have become so profoundly weak now that one
imploded.
If there's a future there at all for them. So the DUP are the only show in town.
Does it also tell us that if you change your leader just before an election, you might be all right? Because there was a fear that certainly here that if Fine Gael had a leadership change and then we had a quick election, that there might be trouble. but Michelle O'Neill leading by example.
Well, I mean, there was a handpicked leader on this occasion. I think there'll be a different scenario within Fine Gael, where you'll actually have a contest where you'll actually have members of the party having a view on this, as opposed to just the leadership going, well, you're it.
A very representative leader, I believe. Yeah. One of the things I think which is, I think,
in fairness to her, though, she performed well in debates.
Yes, it's like there's a children's cartoon called The Penguins of Madagascar, and the chief character in it, whenever he gets into trouble, just goes, salute, smile and wave, boys. And that can get you out of a lot of trouble in Irish politics. I think, actually, we've had the most interesting moment of the campaign, I think, from Owen just there now, where he mentioned, and it's very factual, and I would have to agree with him totally, what you are, it could be a promotion for you yet, there could be an out of vacancy in Dublin yet, generation are going so well in the north. He said, you know, what you say during an election campaign can be quickly forgotten. And I just thought to myself, welcome on, welcome to the realm of dusty pragmatists. You see, that embrace you had with Fianna Fáil this week, all that tic-tacking on the floor of the committee that the Fine Gaelers were leaking, you see, you're learning quickly. You're
I noted that myself during our last conversation. there was a lot of broad agreement between the two here in the water discussion.
Quite a love affair.
My point, I suppose, it isn't, and John is right, but my point isn't so much about the policies, it's about the tone. There was some very acrimonious language during the course of this election campaign, there's no doubt.
But once we sit down
to start doing the negotiations, I think that will be forgotten. But I was a member of Belfast City Council when the unionists lost their majority in Belfast back in 2001. In fact, many of the unionists who are now senior unionist figures in the Assembly, they had dominated Belfast City Council for 100 years. And the arithmetic in Belfast City Hall in 2001 was very similar to what we now have in the Assembly. The Alliance and smaller parties held a balance, and the gap between nationalists and unionists was very, very small. What was really interesting is once the unionist politicians got their head around that new reality, that they had to share power with everybody, and very, very quickly we started to be able to get things done at committee and in council that we weren't able to do previously. So maybe it's just because I'm more of an optimist than Fiona is, but I think there is now a real opportunity. The DUP don't have the ability to veto. They have to work both with other unionists and other parties. I think we can start making some real progress here. That's what we want, but it takes others to work with us to achieve that.
Barry, quick word, and then I have to take another break.
Yeah, just to pick up on that point, that the fact that the DUP no longer have the veto that they would have had previously, you know, one would hope that that in itself will indicate to them that they must engage with the process. They must allow power sharing to be what it can be, and allow the northern political establishment, the northern democratic process, move as was envisaged by the Good Friday Agreement initially. But you know, it's the big issue here is that there's a 3-week window. It'll have to be taken by all parties because there's the whole Brexit situation. The English government, the British government, they're preoccupied at present, and there's an emphasis and an onus of responsibility on that government and the Irish government, ensuring that they play an effective role to make sure that this process brings about restoring faith and confidence in the power sharing agreement, in allowing governance to be successful, and ultimately allow Northern politics move in the direction that it was envisioned initially.
New politics, it works so well.
Well, the people decide what politics, where it goes and what direction it takes and what shape it forms. But ultimately, we all aspire. You know, the one thing I'd say during the course of this week, and I've heard different commentators talk about populism, you know, I'd just like to correct them. There's no such thing as populism. It's called democracy, and we abide by the democratic process.
People
decide everything.
We've about 2 minutes before the programme ends. I was reading, Fiona, on today, I think it was in The Independent, that Enda Kenny wants to meet the European People's Party when it gathers in Wicklow in May, on the 11th and 12th of May. Does that make sense? I don't know why I'm giggling along with the rest of you.
The long goodbye can continue. Well, I mean, there's no real reason why he can't push it out for that long.
Kate might not think there's no real reason. He should take his time.
If the nationwide tour that he himself must undertake, that can't really overlap with the nationwide tour that Leo and Simon have to undertake. So
if Mayo do well, you know.
Yeah. After the match in Croke Park tonight, if Mayo were to beat the Dubs tonight in Croke Park,
it says a lot that Enda Kenny's biggest advocates at the minute are the Fianna Fáil party, and that should send a signal to Kate and her colleagues that, you know, really the time is now to move.
Kate, what do you think of that?
September's a new deadline, Kate.
The contest, he said he's going to set out his stall very clearly when he comes back. we'll wait and see what he says.
This Patrick's
I have no
Day or
idea.
Next Patrick's Day?
I'm not sure which Patrick's Day, but I mean, he said he would set it out, and we'll just let leave the man to do it.
And take a year to mourn the
he's put the ball
of
that far down the field. It'll take a while to come back.
But if he keeps saying, just leave him there. Let him.
But seriously, Kate, if he were to say, "I want to be here until at least May," would you have an issue with that?
I don't have much of an issue with that. But maybe some of the leadership contenders might have. Maybe some of the members of the PPA. But I don't really see why a couple of weeks would matter either way. To be honest, I don't see what the major hurry is. Give the man.
But you wanted the new person to do the Brexit negotiations.
Absolutely. I mean, but I wanted him to be involved in the negotiations from the start, and I still feel that way.
What was the phrase? They see you coming.
But like that, whenever the man decides to step down, he is the Taoiseach, and I have the highest respect for him. And
you know,
and
about me
if it's May,
he's walking around now.
It's a good walk, actually. Yeah. Were you training him?
We are not Callan's Kicks, even though perhaps he might have sounded like it over the last couple of minutes. Callan's
Kicks. More of a John Travolta now than a sort of a John Wayne.
John, we're out of time. John Drennan there, Fionnán Sheehan, Eoghan O'Brien, Kate O'Connell, and Barry Cowan. Thank you all very much indeed. As I say, Callan's Kicks is up next. We're back with you next Saturday. And I hope you can join me on RT1 10:35 for Clare Byrne Live. Have a good weekend.